If it's not her, it has to be Eleanor.
You shout out to her, John. Oh.
Henrietta, it's me, John. Let me in. I need to see you. Come on. Henrietta, it's me, your old friend. Let me in. I'm only here to help. Come on, let me in, please. OK, if you don't let me in, we're going to break down the door and come in anyway.
For God's sake, John, don't come in, please.
That's not Henrietta, that's Eleanor.
Show some compassion.
You're right, Jenny.
Go away. Keep out.
I can't get the door open.
Brian.
Right, stand back.
John, don't come in. Please.
God.
That's Eleanor.
Quick, turn her over.
Gently, let me help.
Oh, that's definitely Eleanor Hyde. Why is she dressed in Henrietta's clothes? They're much too big for her.
Is she alive? There's no pulse. No, she's definitely gone. And look in her hand.
What's she holding?
By the smell, I would say it's what she took to kill herself with.
What was it?
Hard to say, but it's something sweet. Henrietta's cupboards were full of chemicals. She could easily have found something which would be fatal.
Well, she obviously killed herself, that's for sure. We were too late. So where is Henrietta?
Exactly what I want to know. We need to start looking. Brian, why don't you go down to the cellars underneath the operating theatre?
Aye, if you want me to, but I'd rather someone came with me.
Oh, don't be a wimp. Time is of the essence. We'll look everywhere else. Shout if you find something.
Let's cover the poor woman up, shall we? Here, I'll use this throw on the armchair.
It's very odd. The kettle's boiling as if she was just about to make a cup of tea. Oh, God, I need to get out of here.
You lead the way. You know where to look.
Hey!
What? Have you found something?
No, not a thing. What's more, there's no point in going further into that cellar.
Why not?
Well, you can't hardly get beyond the cobwebs over the door. No one's been in there for years. And there's some old medicine cupboards, but they're all empty. There's no down there.
Okay, let's go into the lab.
There's nothing in here. Even the cupboards are empty.
Could she be buried under the floor?
The stone flags. I'm sure we could see if they've been moved recently.
Oh, right. Could she have run away? How about the back door? Oh, it's locked. Is this the one which Eleanor had the key for?
Hey, look, there's a key on the floor.
Looks like it hasn't been used much and needs a good clean.
No, it's broken. Looks like someone's bent it out of shape.
This is getting weirder and weirder by the minute.
Let's go back to the study and have another look. Ugh, I wish she wasn't lying there like that.
Don't look. Let's just have a good look round. What's that on the table?
This saucer. That's the white salt Henrietta always had good supplies of. She was obviously going to mix it with the other stuff.
I don't know what the little bottles are, do you, Rachel?
Not anything I recognise.
Essays by Rowan Williams. Hang on, this is weird. Look, Jenny. Look at all this written in the margins. Bloody effing rubbish. Oh, no. There's worse. Some of it's really obscene.
Goodness me, that is bizarre.
All this, it can't be Henrietta's. She wouldn't write such things. She was a believer. She was quite devout. I mean, she was really interested in theology.
No, that's not at all like the Henrietta I know. Knew. But it is her writing.
Well, let's have a look at her desk. Right, what have we here? Aha! Ah, well, this is a copy of her will. Henrietta's will, I mean. I have the original in my safe at home. Better have a look at it. Well, this is odd. Henrietta made a will some months ago, leaving everything to Eleanor Hyde.
No.
Yes, and I was very unhappy about it. But look, this copy is different. Instead of leaving everything to Eleanor, she's left everything to me. Why on earth?
Well, you deserve it, John.
It's witnessed, too, but oh, no, that can't be. It's witnessed by Eleanor Hyde. Why would Eleanor, knowing Henrietta had dispossessed her, why would she leave this lying around? Why not destroy it? Oh, God, I'm completely baffled.
Oh, here, you dropped something.
Oh. This is a note to me from Henrietta, dated today. So she was alive and here earlier today.
But I don't think that's possible.
Well, she must have been. She can't have been murdered since then. She must still be alive. She must have run away. But why would she run away? And if she has, we can't say for certain that Eleanor's death is suicide, can we? I mean, could Henrietta have killed her and then run away? Look, I think we should call the police.
But we'd have seen her if she'd left. Read the note, John.
I don't really want to, Jenny. You read it. I can't bear to.
All right, then. Here goes. Dear John, by the time you read this, I will have disappeared.
I don't know exactly how or when, but be sure that I will be gone and that my life is over. Jenny has my laptop and knows the password. In a file on the desktop called Hasty, you will find a long email he wrote, which, in the event of my death, he wanted you to read. You may already have a copy of it. Also in the top drawer of my desk, on the left-hand side, is a letter I have written you, which will explain everything. Love from your distraught friend, Henrietta.
I don't know what to say. Wait a moment. Yes, here it is. It's from Henrietta. It's extremely long. It must have taken her hours to write.
Are we going to call the police or just leave Eleanor here?
Look, I don't know. We should call the police. Yes. Oh, no, let me think.
I think it would be safe to leave her here for a while. We can't lock the study, but we can lock up the building, can't we, Brian?
Yeah. No problem. I'll make it safe.
So why don't we quickly have a look through the letter and the email from Hasty, and when we know a little bit more, then we can ring the police. For all we know, she may be in hiding somewhere. Oh, look, I don't know.
I'll go along with that. Why don't you come into the house and I'll get the laptop? I feel we all need a drink after what's happened to you. Brian, are you happy to lock up behind us? Then you can go home. We'll let you know what happens.
Yeah, sure thing.
Look, this could take some time. I'm just going to text Richard and see if he's free to come over.
John, you have to ring the police now. If you don't, I will. It's not good to fail to report a death immediately.
Yes, okay, I know. I know, we must. I'm just desperate to find out what's happened to Henrietta.
Okay, well, I'm going to get Jenny to do it.
Look, I've got the laptop and I'll just have to skim through the document from Hasty she mentioned.
Fine. Drink your whiskey. You need it. Jenny? Jenny?
Oh, what have we got here? 4 days ago, received a note from my old friend, Henrietta Jekyll. It was about 7 at night and I had no plans for the evening. I was very surprised, but I'd seen her a couple of nights before, and I couldn't think of any reason why she would send me a letter rather than just phone me. Anyway, it got stranger when I read the letter. Okay, where is this famous letter? Ah, here. Right, let's have a look. Dear Hasty, you are one of my oldest friends.
And although we haven't always agreed on medical and scientific matters, I'm still very fond of you. I would have done all in my power to help you had you needed it. But now, it's me who is in deep trouble, and I need someone with a medical background to help me. My life and my sanity depends on you. I'm not going to ask you to do anything dishonest or illegal, don't worry. But can you cancel your plans for tonight? I need you to jump into a cab and go straight to my house. Take this letter with you. When you get there, my secretary, Jenny, and our caretaker, Brian, will be expecting you. They know what to do. They will open the door of my study, upstairs, above the lab and the operating theatre. I need you to go in alone, and from the cupboard next to my desk with the glazed doors, remove the fourth drawer from the top. Or you could say it's the third drawer from the bottom. If it's locked, you'll need to break the glass, but Brian will do that for you, so don't worry. Just be sure you've got the right drawer. In it, you will find some bags of powder, some small bottles, and a notebook. I need you to take this drawer, with all its contents, back to your house. Wrap it up in something so no one sees what it is. I think there's a bag somewhere in the study.
Weirder and weirder. Poor old Hasty, he must have been absolutely baffled. What on earth was Henrietta up to? That's the first bit of what I need you to do.
Now for the second. If you go out as soon as you receive this letter, I reckon you should be home in an hour. I'll give you some leeway, but say at 9 o'clock tonight, I want you to be alone in your surgery with the drawer from my study. You'll get a text to say that someone is outside and needs to be let in. That person will mention my name. All you have to do is to give that person the drawer. After that, I don't need you to do anything else. I will be eternally grateful to you. If a little later you want an explanation, you will understand that what you have done has saved my life, or my sanity, or maybe both. I have the utmost faith in you, Hasty, but I'm in a very strange place, not at home, but roaming around the streets. I can't tell you why, but I am terrified. Please do what I ask, please. I am sure you will, but I'm still petrified that you might not. If my plan doesn't work out, you will have seen the last of Henrietta Jekyll.
Your friend, Henrietta. Good God. How extraordinary.
John, the police are here. Jenny's letting them into the study, but I think they'll want to take a statement from you very soon. How are you getting on with the documents?
I've just got to the note from Henrietta to Hasty asking to collect some things from her study. It's all very weird. Shall I come now?
No, you stay and get on with it. I'll come and get you when you're needed.
Thank you, Rich, for being here.
Not a problem. This is one hell of a situation.
Oh, God. Oh, what does Hasty say? When I read this letter, my first thought was that Henrietta
had completely lost the plot. But until I knew for certain, I felt I had to do what she asked. I'd no idea what would happen if I didn't, but she sounded so upset and frightened that I thought I couldn't risk doing nothing. So I called a taxi and went round to her house. Sure enough, Jenny was waiting.
Do come in.
We walked through the lab, and I was appalled to see one of the rabbits in the cages, in a frenzy, trying to bite through the cage door. I asked why it was so het up.
It's been like that for a few months, but Henrietta doesn't seem worried.
Poor little thing.
I suggested she should have her put down, but Henrietta was adamant she should stay alive.
Jenny managed to open the door with her key, so in the end we didn't have to force the lock.
Here you go, just through here.
Jenny insisted on coming in with me and looked a little concerned. I wondered, why hadn't Henrietta asked Jenny to take the drawer out? There was a moment when I thought she might object to my removing the drawer, but I showed her the relevant bit of Henrietta's letter, and she looked a little less worried. So I removed the drawer, as instructed, called another taxi, and took it home. There I looked through the contents of the drawer. As Henrietta had said, there were little bundles of powders. Not made up as neatly as if you'd bought them from a chemist, it looked as if Henrietta had parcelled them up herself. When I opened one of the packets, I found what looked to me like a simple crystalline salt, a kind of dull white colour. The little bottle, I could see, was about half full of a blood-red liquid. Oh, it smelt to high heaven, and I guessed it was phosphorus and probably some volatile ether. There were probably other ingredients, but I couldn't work out what they were. I opened the little notebook, but inside there were just endless lists of dates. They went back years, but then stopped nearly a year ago. Sometimes next to the date was a note, usually no more than a single word. The word double appeared at least 6 times in the total of several hundred dates. And once, in the first few pages, she'd written total failure. None of this meant anything to me. All I had was some powder, a bottle of liquid, and a notebook which seemed to be a record of a series of experiments, which seemed to lead, as with many of Henrietta's other experiments, to no practical or useful result. I was at a loss to understand how the contents of Henrietta's drawer could affect her sanity, or her life, as she had said. Why did her messenger have to come to my house? Why not somewhere else? Jenny's house, for instance. And why did the person have to come in secret? Why couldn't Henrietta come herself? It didn't make sense. The more I thought about it, it seemed certain that Henrietta was suffering from some sort of serious mental illness.
Hi, John. How are you getting on?
Oh.
The police surgeon has certified that Eleanor Hyde is dead and that she committed suicide. There'll have to be an inquest, of course. Jenny's dealing with them. They should be gone soon. Then they'll arrange for the body to be taken away.
Thank you, Rich. Good. I think Henrietta might have had a breakdown. Can you stay, please, while I finish reading?
Sure.
Thank you. Right. Well, we've got to the stage when Hasty is waiting for the person Henrietta is sending round. At 9 o'clock on the dot, I had a text to
say someone was at the door, and a moment later, there was a soft knock. When I opened it, I found a very small woman crouching against the doorframe.
Hi, so, you're expecting me.
I asked her if she was a friend of Henrietta's, and she made a vague gesture, which I took to be a yes.
So, let me in.
I asked her in.
I need to come in.
And she rushed past me into the hall.
I need to come in.
On the other side of the square, I could see a policeman, and it struck me that my visitor was anxious to be out of his sight. We went into my consulting room, where I'd put all the lights on. I took a good look at her. I was certain I'd never seen her before, but unusually for me, I took an instant dislike to her. There was a shocking expression on her face. She seemed very strong physically, but she walked with a slight limp. She had a shock of brown hair, very coarse and wild. And she made me feel extremely uneasy, almost frightened. She gave an impression of contained violence, which worried me. Since then, I've simply come to the conclusion that she merely hated people. And her clothes. What a joke. She was wearing a very nice coat, well cut, a good deep red, but it was at least 4 sizes too big for her. It trailed on the floor around her, and the shoulders were halfway down her arms. She'd rolled the sleeves up, but she looked ridiculous. Actually, it was far from being a joke. I didn't feel like laughing. She just looked mad. I began to wonder where on earth she'd come from, how she'd come into Henrietta's life, who her family was, what her job was, where she lived.
Have you got the drawer? Did you manage to find it? Here, let me see.
Don't come any closer. Before I do anything, I need to know who you are. I've never met you before, so please sit down and be still for a few minutes. Please.
Yes, I am so sorry. Dr. Lanyon, I am sorry. Yes, you're right, you don't know me. Yes, Henrietta Jekyll sent me to collect something from you. Something very important, I think. A drawer from her study with some medication in it.
Yes, I've got the drawer.
Yes. I see it.
Please, calm yourself. You're not in a fit state to look at any medication. As a doctor, I advise you to slow down.
Yes. Thank you. I'll have a look at it now.
What is it?
Oh, yes.
What's in there that you need so much?
Have you got a measuring glass? Or a measuring jug? Anything?
Yes, I have. I'll just get it. Here.
Thank you.
What are you doing now?
I'm just going to mix together this, one of the packets of powder and a few drops of this red stuff there. Watch and see what happens.
It's getting brighter, isn't it?
Yes. And in a minute you'll see it'll go darker and begin to fizz.
Oh, yes, I see. Hang on, it's going green. Oh, and it smells horrible.
Yes, that's what it's supposed to do. Very good. Very excellent.
And now what?
Well, now for the moment of truth. Dr. Lanyon, you now have a choice. I can take this glass and leave your house. Or are you curious to know what this is all about? Think about it carefully. You can decide what happens now. If you decide that I should go, you will be none the wiser than you were before I arrived. You will have done another human being a huge favour, but your life will go on as before.
Or what?
Or I can stay. And you will experience something completely transformational. Something you had no knowledge of before, and your life will be changed forever.
I'm sorry, but you're talking in riddles. I don't understand what you're saying. And I don't believe anything is going to happen.
Oh, something is definitely going to happen. Believe me. Good. So I'll stay. But you must remember your duty of patient confidentiality. What you see in this room must stay in this room. Okay? You promise?
I promise.
Good. And now, you, the good doctor who has so long been trapped in the most conventional ways of medicine, you who has always mocked those of us who work in more enlightened ways, are going to witness something you've never seen before.
Wait, stop! No, don't do it! Stop! What are you doing? God! This can't be happening. It's a nightmare. Oh, God. Oh, God!
There you are. There you are. Here I am. Yes, here I am. Here I am.
Henrietta?
Of course. I bet you weren't expecting that. Oh, pull yourself together, you silly man. Just because you've seen something which you couldn't have believed possible, that's your fault. Because you never would believe that I could do anything seriously impressive. Well, shall I tell you how it all came about? I'm sure you'd love to know.
Oh, my God, I don't know what to say.
I need another drink, and I'll get you one, too. It can't be true. It's impossible.
Oh, God, I needed that. Oh, God. So if that's Hyde in the study, and she's dead, what is Henrietta?
Okay, let's calm down. What else is in Hasty's letter?
Let's see. This is the last bit. What Henrietta told me in the next hour, I can't bring myself to say.
I simply cannot write it down. I saw what I saw. I know what I saw. I know what I heard. It completely sickened me. I ask myself again and again, do I actually believe what I saw and heard? I have no idea. The pictures turn over and over in my mind's eye, over and over again. Can't escape the horror, I can't sleep. It's left me in the grip of a fear so great, I think I'm going mad. I'm just so frightened. I feel that I'm dying and that I'll die soon. And as for the terrifying badness, the sheer and utter moral depravity, the wickedness, the words fail me. The things she told me, even though she had tears in her eyes, I can't bear to write them down. I can't bear to think about them. But they haunt me. They keep me awake at night. I've only one final thing to say, John, and it's this. That little woman who crept into my house that ghastly night was, as Henrietta confirmed, Eleanor Hyde. The woman who is wanted for the murder of Deborah Carew.
Oh, Hasty.
John, are you all right?
I don't know what to think, or say, or feel.
Look, the police are about to leave, and the body will go soon after. We've got what we need for the death certificate. They'd like a word with you before they go, so why don't we just get it over with?
Yes, I suppose so. Well, we dealt with the police and the matter of the death of Eleanor Hyde, but now we were left with the letter Henrietta had written. Rachel went home to her children, and the three of us, Jenny, Richard and myself, settled down in Henrietta's little television room. We opened a bottle of wine and Jenny produced some sandwiches. To be honest, none of us had any appetite. I had given Hasty's email to Jenny to read, and she simply didn't believe it. She said he must have gone mad, and I have to say I rather agreed with her. But now we had to brace ourselves and read Henrietta's side of the story. I was sure it would make sense, and we could then ignore what poor old Hasty had said. Maybe he really had had a breakdown. So, here goes. I was born in 1958 into a well-to-do family.
My parents were professional people, both GPs, and I had a private education. By nature, I was hard-working and did well at school. I did a couple of years at university, which is where I met you, John, and Hasty.
Oh, what fun we had. And, as you know, I then decided I wanted to be a doctor and went to medical school, as did Hasty. I worked hard and I wanted to succeed and to be well thought of by my peers, to excel. But I have to admit that I really enjoyed a drink and parties. And that even when I was doing well in my exams and coming top of the class, I often spent weekends pretty much drunk and pretty much stoned, too. I would find out where the most outrageous parties were and wheedle myself in. I'm ashamed to say that very often by Monday morning, I wasn't able to recall clearly very much of what had gone on or who I had been with. This will shock you, I know, John, but at the time I didn't much care, which is even more shocking, I suppose. During the week, I would be a sober, hard-working, serious young woman who was destined to be a high-flying consultant. Even when things went wrong, and they sometimes did, I actually got beaten up once quite badly, I was able to carry on with my weektime studies and not let it worry me. The people I associated with at the weekends were not my medical friends I saw during the week.
Did you know this was how she was living?
No, because I was still up at Durham after she'd moved to London to start her medical career. We only met again once I returned here when I was articled. And when we began to socialise, I had no idea that she was anything but what she seemed, a friend who was working her way towards a consultancy.
I always took her at face value. What's next?
As you know, I got a position as a junior
doctor at the London Hospital. Did a couple of years, and was lucky enough to get a consultant's job, specialising in head and neck surgery. I loved it. I loved being able to do good for my patients, working with cancer patients and doing my best for them. If things didn't go well, I tried to look after the families in their sorrow. I felt their grief as my own, but I was ambitious. After several years, I realised I'd begun to get a reputation based on my expertise. There were radio and TV appearances, invitations to write and lecture. There were also invitations to smart parties around town. I made enough money to buy my house near the river, where I did a lot of entertaining and where you and I have spent so many convivial evenings. I had several relationships. Mainly with men, but there was a woman too once. A girl I met who was working as a prostitute in the East End.
My goodness, that's surprising.
Actually, that's weird. I can't imagine it.
But none of these affairs lasted. And alongside my respectable and successful life, I was also enjoying being with people quite out of my social circle. Raves, where cheap drugs circulated, I could be anonymous, cover myself with fake tattoos, became my favourite way to spend a Saturday night.
You know, that's odd. She never did entertain on a Saturday, did she? And if we invited her for a Saturday, there was always an excuse, wasn't there? I've only just realised that. Well, I would say she's lucky to be alive, to have escaped all that unscathed.
If she did, that is. Oh, where was I? There came a time when I realised that I had reached a certain position in the eyes of the world,
and an eminent position too. And then I began to feel ashamed of my other life, my partying, my drug-taking, my addiction to danger. But by then I was unable to stop. I felt I was committed to living two quite different lives. I began to think quite deeply about these two sides of my personality. The one, respectable, respected, at the top of her profession, enjoying the good that I was doing for other people. The other, wildly enjoying the lowlife of the city. I didn't think of myself as a hypocrite, though. Both my sides were in dead earnest. I was as much me when I plunged myself into a life of depravity as I was when I was in the operating theatre examining a brain tumour. It was at this stage in my life that I began to do some research into what had been discovered and written about the dual nature of a person. I did a lot of reading around the mystic and the transcendental aspects of the soul. and I went back to Freud and the distinction he made between the conscious and the unconscious mind. After a couple of years, I came to the conclusion that a person is not just one person, but two people. Oh, I know that there's been a lot of research into multiple personality disorders, and I've read some of the case studies, but personally, I don't buy into that. My own conclusion was that everyone has two personalities inside them. I realized that I was, myself, two completely different people. I saw that of the two natures that lived in me, it was only because I was completely in both of them that I could be in either. But then, slowly, the two completely different sides of me began to fight each other inside me. I was buffeted between them. And then I began to think how wonderful it would be if I could separate these two elements so that they could be housed in two separate bodies. The upright Henrietta Jekyll, the respected and clever doctor, could live her life untroubled by whatever the other side of her personality was doing. She need not feel ashamed of what her other self was getting up to. Or so it seemed to me. As you know, a few years ago I was able to buy the old dissecting theatre which was at the end of my garden. I resigned from the NHS, built an operating theatre, and next to it I set up my little laboratory. I went into private practice and turned my hand to cosmetic surgery, which is in huge demand. I offered Botox and collagen and simple plastic surgery. I made a lot of money as word got around. I know a lot of people didn't approve of this, so I kept that part of my life separate from my friends. That's why you didn't know I owned the old building. And in my spare time, I experimented with cosmetics, which I packaged and sold to my patients using natural vegetable products. And this was another profitable sideline. I also began to experiment with making mind-altering drugs.
I never knew that. And I'm sure that Rachel didn't know either.
Did you know, Johnny?
No, I did not. Oh, this doesn't sound as if there's going to be a happy ending.
No, it doesn't.
Well, let's see. I tried these drugs out first on my two little rabbits.
Oh, that's the reason that Petal turned nasty. Well, at least now maybe we can get the vet to her. It's been worrying me for weeks.
One rabbit gradually turned vicious.
And I was completely thrilled. My experiments were successful. Gradually, I began to understand how it might be possible for a drug to change the substance of a person bodily. I managed to get Petal to change shape, too. You'll shake your heads at this, I know, as Hasty did, but a body is not as solid as we sometimes think.
Oh, my God, that does sound as if she was going mad. How would that be possible?
Heaven knows. This is becoming more and more disturbing.
I'm not going to describe the various experiments I conducted.
It's enough to say that I found certain chemicals which, when mixed together, could alter physical appearances. And I don't want to reveal a process which is, at the moment, incomplete scientifically. Suffice it to say that I invented a drug which enabled me to take on another physical shape. A different body to that of the respectable Henrietta Jekyll, but which held the other side of me. The side that was still me, but the dark side, which relished the depravity I craved when I wasn't working. I hesitated and thought long and hard before putting this theory to the test. I understood very well that the risks were huge, but I could die. Any drug which was powerful enough to change a person physically could end in my death if I miscalculated the ingredients even by a fraction. But I couldn't resist giving it a go. If it worked, it would be incredible, and the implications profound. Even though I was terrified, I decided to go ahead with the experiment.
I can't stand this. I've opened another bottle of wine.
Oh, thanks, Jenny. Oh, I think I'll need that. Okay, we have to grit our teeth and carry on, I think. I had prepared very carefully.
I bought, from a chemist, a large amount of a particular salt, which I already knew was the final ingredient I needed. very late one night, a night I now remember with horror, I mixed together the various chemical elements, watched them boil and smoke together in the glass, and when it had cooled, I braced myself and drank it down. Almost immediately, I was gripped with the worst pain imaginable. I've never felt such pain. I could hear my bones grinding together. I felt sick to my stomach. I remember shrieking with fear. After a few moments, the pain lessened, and I found myself coming to as if I had fainted. I was lying on my back on the floor, so maybe I had actually passed out. I began to feel a little strange, but I was filled with something new, something reckless, something marvellous, and I felt amazingly happy. My head was going round and round. I felt younger, lighter, happier in my body. I was also conscious of a heady recklessness, a desire to run and jump and bound about. I realised at once that I also felt as if I could do some person a great harm. And this thrilled and delighted me.
Oh, God, I can't read this. I can't. She must have gone totally mad. Do you think this is some sort of made-up rubbish? Is she trying to write a film script or something?
It's too weird for me to believe it. This is either some mad attempt at fiction, or she had a complete nervous breakdown, and this is just her fantasy.
We've got to get to the end of it.
Yes, all right. Oh, God. Yes, where were we? I stretched out my hands.
And when I looked, they seemed much smaller than mine. And I was suddenly aware that I was much smaller, too, in height than I had been. At that stage, I didn't have a mirror in the study. The one that's there now I bought much later on, just so I could check my reflection. By this time, it was the early hours of the morning and still dark. It was too early for anyone to visit, so I decided to go through the house and look at myself in the mirror in my bedroom. I crept upstairs, went into my room, and then I saw, for the first time, the appearance of Eleanor Hyde.
Wow. Oh.
Her, or rather my, appearance was not so pretty. She was small, younger than Henrietta, and thinner, and with a shock of wild, coarse brown hair. And the expression on her face was, frankly, unpleasant. Her eyelids were half-closed, altogether not a prepossessing sight. But I didn't feel in the least repulsed. Instead, I felt a kind of jolt of recognition, because this was indeed me. I looked at myself in the mirror and wondered whether I was smaller because the Hyde side of me was less developed than the nice side of Jekyll, which had done such good work. Well, it's only a theory. I looked again and thought the reflection so vivid, so arresting, but natural and human. I recognised myself in that face. I could see in Eleanor a more expressive face than the reserved, kind and careful Henrietta. I suddenly felt myself to be 10 times more wicked than I had ever felt in my life before, and I was more excited than I can say. I knew, on that first morning, that Eleanor Hyde was probably the only person in the whole world who was pure evil.
Wow.
I took a long last look at Eleanor in the mirror, and then I ran back to my study above the operating theatre. I found I had a slightly odd walk, a limp, as if one of my legs was longer than the other. But I was too busy wondering if the drug which would put me inside Jekyll's body again would work. To my relief, it did.
Oh.
And after a few extremely painful moments, I came to myself again in the body of Henrietta Jekyll. That was a relief, I can tell you.
So where is she? I just don't buy this story at all. It's too bizarre.
I don't believe it either.
We're not even halfway through yet. That night I'd come to a fatal crossroads.
Had I approached the experiment solely in the spirit of Henrietta, as a scientific experiment which might have benefited mankind, I think that the other person I became might have been a good and kind person. But the drug had no discrimination. It simply, I think, unlocked what was inside me. And that happened to be the beastly bit of my nature, because that's what I wanted. I wanted the freedom to do harm. I know this is shocking to you and whoever else reads it, but it is the truth. I'm not proud of it. I had been aware for some time that I was getting a little bored with the routine and ordinary life that Henrietta Jekyll was living, while longing for more escape into the underworld, and that's why I think the drug released something so evil within me.
Interesting theory, if this is anything but the imaginings of a madwoman.
Oh, look, here we get to the bit where she explains about Hyde's house. She says... Oh, let me see. She says she rented that small flat in Soho in the name of Eleanor Hyde from that landlady that I met.
I just don't understand. Surely it can't be physically possible to change yourself into another person.
Well, in this day and age, when you think you can transplant a face onto someone else, one might be tempted to think anything is possible, and that Henrietta did stumble upon something extraordinary. But no, Jenny... I think she went, or has gone, mad.
I agree. It reads like a fantasy sci-fi novel. I had only to drink the medicine to get out of the body of the...
comfortable middle-class doctor and move into the misshapen little body of the violent little woman who wanted nothing more than to crawl round the back streets of London looking for an outlet for her rage. I loved it. I told Jenny and Rachel and everyone who worked at my house that my friend Eleanor Hyde, whose appearance I described to them, would be seen around from time to time. And I found it fun to ring my own doorbell at the front door of my own house when I was in the guise of Eleanor and introduce myself. That was funny.
Hi. My name is Eleanor Hyde.
I do remember that day. I took a dislike to her from the moment I saw her.
Then I asked you to draw up that will, John. The one you were so unhappy about.
Now, what's this all about, Henrietta?
You'll find out in due course, John. Don't worry. I just know this is the best way to proceed. I think you thought, didn't you, that Eleanor was after my money and would probably try to murder me. But the will meant, of course, that if somehow Henrietta came to grief, I could carry on in the body of Eleanor with access to my house and cash. And after the will was sorted, I found myself feeling free as a bird. I felt totally ecstatic. I didn't exist. I could do whatever I pleased as Eleanor Hyde, and then as soon as I was back in my own study, within a few minutes, I could become Henrietta Jekyll, peacefully sitting in front of the fire with a glass of wine. But when I came back from these outings with Eleanor, I was often surprised at how ferociously I'd been behaving. Before I found Eleanor, my activities on those dark Saturday nights had been undignified, yes. I got drunk, I got stoned, but I knew where I could get drugs.
I knew where to go for sex.
I don't know what to say. And of course, I never saw her at weekends, did I?
Neither did we. Except for that one Sunday when we were walking along the back and we saw her sitting in the window of her study.
Oh, when Eleanor had attacked you. Oh, how could I forget that? Oh, Richard. Oh, look, we'd better carry on. But I didn't hurt anyone else, as far as I know. But when I was Eleanor Hyde...
These activities soon began to turn into monstrous acts. Eleanor is guilty of murder. Not once, my friend. But three or four times.
Put that bloody phone away!
And of the attack on Richard.
God, stop that! Leave her alone!
Henrietta was, and is, mortified at her behaviour. And shocked. I cannot bring myself to describe it. But Henrietta didn't feel guilty, strangely, and Eleanor got away with all of it. I had one narrow escape early on when I attacked a young woman, which was seen by Richard. And as you know, in order to pacify him and the girl's family, I had to find some money. And the only way I could do that was to go back to my house and get hold of my checkbook.
Tell me how much you want.
Of course, the name on it was Henrietta Jekyll, but it was all okay because I'd already signed the check as Henrietta in my normal handwriting. A couple of days later, I opened another account in the name of Eleanor Hyde.
Yes, here's my proof of address. What else do you need?
I just had to provide proof of address and a utility bill.
And this?
And said I'd been out of the country till recently.
Well, yeah, I've been out the country for a while, so, what?
Once I'd given Eleanor a signature, which I did by writing sloping backwards, I thought I was pretty much out of danger of discovery.
Well, that's what Roger spotted.
What do you mean?
Well, he noticed ages ago that the two signatures were mirror images of each other. Henrietta's writing slopes forwards and Eleanor's slopes backwards. But the E's are the same. They look like the number three in reverse. It's very odd.
How much more to go?
It's quite a lot. I didn't want Eleanor to have a bank card.
Because I didn't trust her not to spend too much of Henrietta's money. I thought she might ruin me financially. About 2 months before the murder of poor old Lady Carew, I'd been out on one of my adventures and I got home in the early hours of the morning. I woke up the next day feeling a little odd. I looked around the room and there was the familiar furniture, the curtains. I was in my own bedroom, in my own house. But in spite of that, I had the weird feeling that I was really in those rooms in Soho, where I sometimes slept as Eleanor. I dozed off for a few minutes, and then woke up and looked down at my hand. Now, the hand which belongs to Henrietta is elegant, well-shaped, with, though I say it myself, nicely tended fingernails. But the hand which I saw on the bed was lean, corded, knuckly, the fingers bent and arthritic, and the nails cracked and yellowing.
What?
This was the hand which belonged to Eleanor Hyde.
Oh, my God, what next? This is not possible.
I must have stared at it for at least a minute in a kind of daze.
Before I flew into a complete panic, I leapt out of bed and raced to the mirror. I've never understood the expression, the blood runs cold, but that's exactly what happened. I felt icy with shock and terror.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What do I do now?
I'd gone to bed as Henrietta Jekyll, but I'd woken up as Eleanor Hyde.
What's happened?
How on earth had that happened? And how on earth was I going to get back to Henrietta?
How am I going to get back? How am I going to get back?
I was in my house, in Henrietta's own bedroom, and the drugs were across the garden in my study. How could I get to them?
Oh, no.
After a few minutes, I calmed myself down, and I realised that, of course, everyone in the house was used to the occasional presence of Eleanor. So I summoned up my courage, wrapped myself up in one of Henrietta's coats, and raced over there. 10 minutes later, I was able to walk back into the house as Henrietta and try to force some breakfast down. I had no appetite.
I remember that day. I arrived for work and she was still sitting with a cup of coffee. She looked ill, pale and gaunt.
This episode frightened me.
I wondered whether this was the beginning of the end. I had been conscious lately that when I was in the form of Eleanor, I'd been more energetic and more aggressive than before, and I began to wonder if Eleanor was becoming stronger than the calm Henrietta side of me. The body of Eleanor had even seemed to me to have grown a little taller and more rounded. I was afraid I was slowly losing my original and better self, and becoming incorporated into my second and worse self. I knew that the power of the drug wasn't always predictable. I'd, once or twice, had to double the dose to get back to Henrietta, and I was well aware how dangerous that was. Once I'd actually trebled it, and I knew that was playing with fire, or rather, my death. Now I began to fear that one day I might lose the power to turn myself back into Henrietta Jekyll, and I might become entirely Eleanor Hyde.
This is madness, isn't it?
It would explain some things I thought were unusual at the time, but I can't believe she actually found a way to change into a different person. It must be physically impossible. And where is she, for God's sake?
I don't know anymore. Look, let's just get to the end. I thought the time was probably coming soon when I would have to choose between the two selves.
We had memories in common, but all my other characteristics were not equally divided between the two. Henrietta loved the adventures which Eleanor enjoyed, the violence, the thrill of the chase. But Eleanor had no interest in Henrietta at all. She was utterly indifferent to her. So I came to the conclusion that I should leave Eleanor alone and go back to being the respectable doctor surrounded by friends and well thought of by society. And that meant saying goodbye to the freedom, the hellish pleasures, the comparative youth of Eleanor. So I chose Henrietta, eventually, and resolved to live that life. I began to see my friends, to go back to church on Sundays, and read a lot, some theology, some self-help stuff. But sadly, I didn't have the strength to keep it up. After a couple of months, I began to be tortured by longings for my other life. And one day I gave in and took the medicine.
And Eleanor, having been ignored, came out roaring. Roaring, roaring, roaring!
Even as I drank down the potion, I could feel myself full of murderous rage. So when I met Lady Carew, walking so calmly down the road, her very friendliness and openness made me so furious I just wanted to kill her.
What?
I can't explain it. She just maddened me.
What do you want? What?
She was so old and so very frail.
What?
So it wasn't too difficult to overpower her. She just didn't put up any resistance.
Oh, shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
As I attacked her, I remember just feeling a mad sort of joy and exhilaration. I remember laughing out loud with the thrill of it all. It wasn't until I was exhausted that I came to a sense of reality, by which time it was clear I'd killed her. And I was instantly petrified of what I'd done. I realized that was the end of me, and I raced off as fast as I could to my rooms in Soho. By the time I got there, I was shaking all over and could barely stand. But I was still on a weird kind of high. I destroyed all my documents just to be on the safe side and set off for home. I felt very light-headed, very dizzy, but I still felt thrilled by what I'd done, whilst knowing I had to get back to being Henrietta as soon as possible. As I drank down the medicine in my study, I was still exulting at what I'd done. But as soon as I turned into Henrietta again, I was on my knees on the floor, crying with gratitude. I gave thanks to God that I'd managed to become again the sane, sensible person which Henrietta is. I sat down with a drink, and I looked back over my life from happy childhood days, a successful career, good friends, money, and arrived at the present day and the horror of what had just happened. When I thought of it, I wanted to scream out loud. I wept until I was exhausted. As I got calmer, I realised that finally I had the solution. I was now to be Henrietta only. To turn back into Eleanor was now impossible. Who knew what other horrors I might commit in future? I knew I had to put a stop to this forever, if I were to survive. Never again would Eleanor Hyde come into the lab. The next day I woke up and turned the radio on, and the first voice I heard was that of a cashier from the local bank who was describing how she'd witnessed the attack. She described Eleanor accurately. I was terrified. It was headline news because of Lady Carew's standing in the House of Lords. I now knew that Eleanor had to go. If she appeared in public once more, she would be arrested for the murder, for which I was sure she would get life. I was now totally and completely Henrietta. I hope you'll remember, John, how I did try and live a good life for those few months. I was, of course, trying in some way to atone for my crime, wasn't I? I went to the theatre, saw my friends, enjoyed some lovely supper parties. I went back to church and began to help with the food bank and visited some of the lonely old people. And I enjoyed myself. For a while.
Yes, that's right. She did enjoy those few months, didn't she?
Yes, she really seemed happier than for a long time. I still don't believe this, though.
But that description of killing Deborah does sound genuine.
Oh, dear. Look, we better get on or we'll never find her. But I knew that inside myself I was still two people.
And after a few months, my darker side started to growl inside me. I wanted to go out again on a Saturday evening, in disguise, and mix with alcoholics and drug addicts, and enjoy myself. Not that I had any desire to turn myself into Eleanor. That way, true madness lay. The very thought of her would put me in a frenzy of worry. No, it was as Henrietta that I began to prowl around the seedy clubs and pubs, taking my pleasures wherever I could find them.
That is really horrible.
And it sounds realistic, doesn't it? No magic potions going on.
The crisis came suddenly. I was sitting in Regent's Park
on a cold, clear day. It was wet underfoot where the frost had melted, but cloudless overhead. I sat in the sun on a bench, thinking about my life, about my two selves, enjoying the memories of the last Saturday night, but at the same time, enjoying the thought of going to church the following Sunday. And then, suddenly, I began to feel horribly sick, and my whole body began to shudder from head to foot. I thought I was going to faint, and after that I was aware that my mood was changing. I began to feel alert, aggressive, to feel a contempt for ordinary people. It was weird. And then I looked down and found that my clothes, Henrietta's clothes, were hanging off me. I seemed smaller than I had been, and the hand which was on my knee was small and deformed. Suddenly I was once again.
Suddenly I was once again Eleanor Hyde.
Oh my God, this is insane.
Seconds before, I had been popular, well-off, established, and now I was a murderer on the run.
It was interesting how, even in that moment of complete turmoil, the Eleanor part of my brain remained clear. I'd noticed in the past that Henrietta's side of my mind sometimes panicked or found it hard to make decisions, but the Eleanor side of me, that mind was far more logical and quick to find solutions. My problem now was how to get the medicine I needed to change back into Henrietta. That was at home in my study. I sat hunched on the bench in the sunshine with my head in my hands, trying to make a plan. I couldn't go back to my house or the lab because someone would be bound to see me and then I would be arrested. So how was I going to get hold of the drugs? After a couple of minutes, I realised I would have to get someone else to go and get them. I couldn't bear to get you involved, John, and that's when I thought of Hasty. As a doctor, I thought he wouldn't query my request that he collect some drugs from my lab. I'd got my phone with me, fortunately. I could text him or email, I thought. But then, I thought maybe the text wouldn't arrive. Sometimes it takes a while, and I was desperate. I adjusted my clothes as best I could, turned the collar of my coat up to try and hide my face. I walked out of the park, found a newsagent, and managed to buy a small notebook and pen. I walked back to the park and wrote Hasty a letter explaining that I needed him to go to my house and get the drawer from my study which had the medication I needed. I thought the safest thing to do would be to put the note through his door. But I felt shaky with fear as I set off to walk to his house, using the side streets wherever I could. I found as I walked along the embankment that I was muttering to myself. I wrapped myself up tightly in Henrietta's coat. As I walked along, I could see that people were giving me a wide berth, hardly surprisingly. Perhaps they took me for a drunk. I must have seemed like one. I was yet again thankful that no one had taken a photograph of Eleanor. The identikit picture the police had produced from the girl's description was laughable. No one would recognise me from that. By the time I got to Hasty's house, I was completely exhausted. I put the note through his door. It was now dark, and I managed to find a bench further along the road, tucked into the square's communal garden, from where I could watch his front door. Sure enough, half an hour later, I saw a taxi pull up, and he came out of the house and climbed in. I found myself in such a state that my teeth started chattering with panic. It seemed an eternity before Hasty arrived back home. I watched him get out of the cab and go inside. I waited a few moments, and then I pulled out my phone and sent him a text saying the person he was expecting was outside. You know from his letter what happened next.
Hi, so, you're expecting me. I need to come in.
When I managed to turn back into Henrietta, I know Hasty was shocked, watching it happen. Not surprisingly. But my horror of being Eleanor and the relief of being Henrietta again was so great that I didn't really pay that much attention to his misery. I felt totally thrilled in that moment that he had seen one of my triumphs.
Henrietta?
Of course. I bet you weren't expecting that. After that, all I could think of was to get home as quickly as possible. I called a cab and got straight into bed. I slept deeply and dreamlessly, and when I woke up next morning, I felt shaky, but rested. I was so grateful to be in my own home, in my original self, that I felt almost cheerful.
I think I need another glass of wine, don't you?
I'm beginning to think I need something stronger. Is there any whiskey in that bottle, Jenny?
Absolutely. Here.
Thanks. I feel shattered, don't you? Both mentally and physically.
Cheers.
Slanza. On we go. After breakfast, I went to my study just to collect a book.
It was another beautiful day, and I felt so good. Suddenly, though, I was appalled to feel my whole body racked with pains so intense I nearly fell over. I barely had time to get myself into the lab before I was yet again raging and growling in the person of Eleanor. It took a double dose of the drug to get back to Henrietta, and some hours later, it happened again. I managed to revert to Henrietta, but after that, I would be Eleanor once more unless I took a double or even treble doses of the medication every few hours. At all hours of the day and night, I would turn into Eleanor without warning. And one of those nights, yes, I went down to my old haunts, got some gear from an old friend, and then I killed him. Poor chap. He was so stoned, I don't think he knew what was happening.
So it was Eleanor Hyde. My God.
And there are probably one or two other murders she committed, which we don't know about.
Maybe the bodies haven't yet been found. They could be in the river.
Oh, I don't want to think about it.
After that, I didn't dare to leave the lab building, and I couldn't go into my own house either.
In fact, I haven't been back to the house since then, which is why I had neither my laptop nor my phone with me. I was a prisoner. And after a while, I didn't dare go to sleep.
Henrietta? Are you in there?
I couldn't risk opening the door when Jenny called, not even half an inch. She would see my hand, and that would have given me away. I became eaten up and emptied with a fever, sleepless, terrified, weak in body and mind, frightened even to doze for a second in my chair. I had only one overriding thought, and that was my horror for the person who was Ms. Hyde.
Every time I turned into Eleanor, she raged with energy and life.
On the other hand, every time I changed, it was getting less painful. And that was truly terrifying too. She seemed to be getting stronger every day, to be boiling with rage and hate, as Henrietta became more and more exhausted.
I knew I was right. I knew it wasn't Henrietta shut up in that place. So she is dead. If this is true, and she was really turning into Eleanor Hyde.
Well, let's get to the end. Then we'll know where she is and what happened.
And now I found that each of my two selves
hated each other. Henrietta abhorred Eleanor instinctively with a passion and thought of her as a thing deformed and hellish. Eleanor hated Henrietta differently. Her terror of being arrested and sent to prison for murder made her resent the fact that she had to turn back into Henrietta to keep herself safe. That's why Eleanor loathed everything to do with her. And so she scrawled obscenities on the pages of her books, in Henrietta's own handwriting. If it hadn't been for her fear of prison, I think she might somehow have ruined herself in order to ruin me, Henrietta. But Eleanor's passion for life was so strong that although I am sickened by her, and I know she's terrified that I will kill her by committing suicide, I almost feel sorry for her.
How could Henrietta feel sorry for that thing? Even saying that is madness. I feel I'm going crazy just listening to it all.
I agree. The final straw in this sorry saga is that I began to run out of the original batch
of salt, which is the basis of the medication. The next batch didn't do the trick. It just didn't work. Jenny will no doubt have told you by now of how I tried to get more of the original. I came to the conclusion that the first delivery wasn't totally pure, and that's what made the drug work so erratically. Now, dear John, I'm writing this under the influence of the last of the medication, so I am Henrietta, but I may not have very long left. This may be the last time Henrietta can look into her mirror and see her own face. A face which, I might add, is much older and sadder now. I've destroyed the key to the back door so that Eleanor can't get out ever again. And I must finish this quickly because it is sheer luck that Helena hasn't got hold of this letter and torn it up. If I am changed into her while writing this,
I know she will destroy it instantly.
On the other hand, she knows that the end is coming, and that has both changed and rather crushed her spirit. Very soon, I know that I will be Eleanor Hyde again, and I know that I will then sit shuddering and crying in my chair, or I will be so frightened that I will be heard pacing up and down this room, listening out for anyone approaching, which I know will be the end of me. I will be stuck forever in the body and soul of Eleanor, and there is no future for her, murderer that she is. Will she go to prison for life? Or can she find the courage to make an end? God only knows. All I know is that this is when Henrietta dies. What happens next is not down to me. So, John, goodbye. Try not to think too badly of me.
This is nonsense. It's like a bad gothic novel.
In which case, where is she?
Where on earth is Henrietta?
Hello! Come in! Come in! Jenny! So lovely to see you. And Rachel, too. Come in.
Hi, John. Thanks for inviting us.
Ditto. I brought a bottle.
Oh, you shouldn't have, but thank you. Come through. Richard's in the kitchen. He's cooking tonight.
Lovely. I'm starving.
That was delicious, Richard. Thank you.
Absolutely. That was lovely.
Yes, very good. Thanks, Rich.
You're more than welcome.
Well, I thought it was time we had a proper catch-up, now that Henrietta's been missing for over a year. We all know the verdict on Eleanor, suicide. The inquest was quite clear about that. We know that absolutely no one turned up at the funeral. I checked with the undertakers. I certainly didn't want to go, even out of respect for Henrietta.
No, none of us did. But thank you for paying for it, John.
Well, there wasn't much choice. I wasn't going to buy flowers or anything.
So, what do we think?
Well, the papers had a field day, didn't they, with the suicide. But I'm glad that we've been able to keep Henrietta's disappearance out of the news. Well done, John. That was down to you.
Well, I think it was lucky that they were so fixated on Eleanor, you know? Mystery, woman murderer, tabloid sensationalism. The whole idea that a woman could be so evil, it took them right back to Myra Hindley and Rose West, so that they didn't really care about Henrietta, especially with the other murders they think might have been committed by her. But we care.
Absolutely. I still think she's alive somewhere. I simply don't believe her story.
I have to say I agree with you, Jenny.
Me too.
Well, I don't believe her story either, but if she was making it up, how does that square with poor old Hasty's story? And why was he so upset? And if Henrietta's alive somewhere, why hasn't she touched her bank account?
I don't know. I don't have any answers. And what do we do about the house? I mean, I've been popping in once a month to check that it's all okay, but I can't keep doing that forever.
And I'm too busy now to help with that.
Well, if she doesn't surface before 7 years from her disappearance, the law states that she can be declared legally dead. Then her will becomes valid and John inherits the whole shebang. That's what her latest will said.
Well, you've been very generous, John, to all of us who work for her. And you're paying the bills, too.
Oh, well, yes, but if she doesn't turn up, I can recoup that. I suppose that's what we'll have to do, have her declared legally dead. And I think we can prove that the will is a legal document, even though it's signed and witnessed by someone who is herself dead. I suppose in the meantime we could try and let the house. It's in such a good location, and anyway, we can't sell it.
What about the lab building at the end of the garden?
Well, I've been thinking about that. I think we could apply for permission to demolish it.
Oh, good idea.
I don't expect, even if Henrietta does come back, that she would mind.
I imagine she might be delighted.
So all we can do is wait and see if she turns up. I have never in my life been so baffled by anything. I don't believe her story either, but if it's not true, where is Henrietta?
I'm in a very difficult situation. In fact, a very strange situation. What happens next is not down to me. So, John, goodbye. Try not to think too badly of me.
You have been listening to Henrietta Jekyll and Eleanor Hyde by Libby Spurrier. An Audible original production, directed by Martin Montague. With Tim Bentinck as Inspector Newcomen, Bill Fellows as Brian Bradshaw, Hugh Fraser as Richard Enfield, Holiday Granger as Eleanor Hyde, Clive Mantle as John Utterson, Carla Mendonca as Dr. Henrietta Jekyll, Katerina Olsen as Rachel Clark, Miranda Raisin as Jenny Poole and PC Debbie Black, Hugh Ross as Dr. Hasty Lanyon. Other parts were played by members of the company. Vocal edit and sound design by Martin Montague. Original music by Howard Carter. Casting by Marielle Runacre-Temple for Audible Studios. Production coordinators Nicola Wall, Imogen Papworth, and Yuki Palmer. Broadcast assistant, Abby McLaughlin. Runner, Lise Mick. The production was engineered by Rowan Onrett. Editor, Triona Humphreys. Executive producer, Katie Arlett. Commissioning editor, Rebecca Fenton for Audible Originals. Visit audible.co.uk for plenty more titles.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.